Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
So it's you.
Well, no one's watching because we didn't tweet it out.
Investigate, AK, investigate.
I'm speaking to no one right now.
Well, for those of you who are here, welcome to the final post-fight show of 2020, UFC Vegas 17 in the books. It capped off with Wonderboy Thompson, vintage Wonderboy, sweeps the scorecards, defeats Jeff Neal via unanimous decision. And with that, the 2020 calendar year for the UFC has come to an end. And we're going to talk all about it right now. Thanks for joining us one last time. I am Mike Peck, being joined by Alex Kaylee. I know he's busy right now. Jose Youngs is multitasking as well. And E. Casey Lydon, producer extraordinaire.
I'm just
with a cup of coffee. Yeah. He's got sleeves now.
Yeah, sleeves. It's cozy.
So different.
It's
cozy. He's got his Randy's Donuts sweatshirt on. Just making life look grand. But Casey, let's begin with you.
One question first. Casey, do you have a Randy's Donuts shirt on because you like Randy's Donuts or because he lives next to you?
A little of both. Why not?
Okay. That's a good answer.
It's right down the street. I can throw a rock at it.
On story, before we get into the fight talk, like my dad's, one of my dad's co-employees, his name is Randy and had a Randy's Donuts poster on his wall for 20 years. And I thought it was a fictional place until the first time I ever went to LA.
Ah,
I like it.
Destiny.
Everything comes full circle in this crazy life of ours. But Casey, let's begin with you since we got some multitasking going on amongst the diagonals over here. Stephen Thompson, a lot of people I've been seeing turn back the clock. This is vintage Wonder Boy. And one thing I did want to mention is this is like a tale of two cards the last couple of weeks. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was last week we were writing obituaries, so to speak, for JDS and Jacare Souza. This week we got Jose Aldo and Stephen Thompson coming through with huge wins. So before we get to the people, because you guys are going to dictate all of this since it's the last one we're doing in 2020, your thoughts overall on Thompson's performance to cap off the night and the year, Casey?
Oh, and the year. Wow. That's a big question. For the night, though, the main event, Steve Wonderboy Thompson, I was super impressed. I picked Neil to win this fight. I thought his aggression and being in the small cage, I thought that would be a big advantage to him. And, man, Wonderboy was just... He was very impressive. I mean, he did get caught up in the small cage a couple of times. He tripped a little bit. Every time he took a big shot, it was because he just ran out of room to go back. And but man, just he still got his reflexes. He still hits hard enough to threaten for it to be a significant threat. He's still tough as heck. He had that big cut in his face. His knee was all blown up or something. And there were moments in that fight where I go, oh, okay, this is the part. This is the part where Steven Wonderboy, everything goes downhill. It just never happened. 25 minutes. And, man, just great performance. Vintage Steven Wonderboy Thompson. And, man, well, there are a lot of high fives in that. Oh, my God. I think that was like, all the punching and kicking was great. There must have been. Okay, that had to be the most high fives ever in a fight. I don't know who does that, those significant strikes for high fives. But that was a... I felt like Bisbing was about to kind of flip over his chair. Actually, I felt like I felt Neil was so annoyed at every high five and every time he hugged. Like, I think at the beginning of the fifth round, Thompson came out for a hug, and Jeff Neal just went like, oh, really, man? Let's do this afterward. It was great.
AK, I believe you picked Jeff Neal to win this fight as well. I believe in our MMA fighting staff picks contest.
Oh, did I?
It came down to you and Guillerme, and Guillerme comes out on top once again.
Jeff
the
Neal?
Brazilian beast.
What? Jeff Neal by decision? What? That doesn't sound like something I would do. What are you talking about? That's the only insane person would think that Jeff Neal would win a point battle against Steven Wonderpoint. Who would predict that? People, do not go to MMAfighting.com and check out the UFC Vegas 17 predictions. Don't bother. It doesn't matter. It's in the past. Who cares about predictions at this point? I mean, I think obviously anyone who's sane knew that. Like, anyone who's sane and has any credibility would know that if it went to a decision, Steven Thompson was going to win it. So, I mean, I don't even know what we're talking about here. The cliche, there's levels to this. And Neil, man, I thought after the first round, I was like, he's got four more rounds to figure it out. He did not figure it out. And Steven Thompson looked fantastic. Like, he was just pushing the pace the entire fight, just picking him apart. And other than the something going on with his knee, his right knee in the final round, he really never looked like he was in danger. So, yeah, great stuff. We said there's up to this vintage, whatever cliches you want to throw out there, they definitely apply to what Steven Thompson did in the main event tonight.
Jose, what did you think? And one of the things that kind of stuck out to me was Casey talked about Jeff Neal sort of being frustrated about the high fives. I think he was frustrated by a lot of what Wonderboy was doing in there. There were definitely flashes where he like turned his back and had to regroup because he was just like, oh my God, like I cannot hit this guy. And every time I throw a shot, he literally hits me 15 times in a row. So obviously, Wonderboy, great performance for him. But for Jeff Neal, he's got to take a ton away from this fight, is he not?
Yeah, I mean, it was... what Wonderboy Thompson does. It's like watching Steven Thompson frustrate his opponent is like watching Damian Maia frustrate his opponent. You know what he's going to do, and you've seen it a million times, and you can say you've planned for it as much as you want, but it's two masters of their craft that have been doing it their entire lives, and you've probably been training in this. You've been focusing on this very specific path to victory that your opponent lays out for probably like what, at most 8 weeks. It's Jeff Neal has taken a lot away from this. He didn't get finished. He got completely outclassed. But as we've heard 1,000 times, you learn the most in your losses. I've never fought Wonderboy Thompson. I probably never will. So I can't say what it's like to lose to Steven Thompson, but it's got to be just a demoralizing experience. And I have a feeling that Jeff Neal his next opponent is probably going to get decapitated just as Jeff Neal unleashes all his frustration out at once.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back, and I hope Wonderboy didn't seriously hurt his knee, because this guy has had a hard time over the last few years getting out of a fight, win or lose, without some sort of injury that either requires surgery or, you know, some sort of gnarly thing that keeps him out of action for a little while. And just when Wonderboy starts to really get back on track and momentum shifts, something always happens coming out of these fights, whether he breaks one hand or both hands and now a knee injury. Hopefully it's just a bruise and something he can get through really quickly, so we don't have to wait till December of 2021 to see him again. So we'll keep our eye on that. But at this point, let's just go right to the people. Let's go right to the peeps. It's your show. It's the final post-fight show of 2020. It's the holiday spirit. I'm feeling very generous.
Oh, that's from earlier.
Real quick, what were the bonuses?
All three finishers. So is Jimmy Flick, mm-hmm. Marcin Tybura, Rob Font, mm-hmm. and then Steven Wonderboy Thompson got himself a bonus.
There you go.
So there you go. 50 G's for Wonderboy. Upstate Karate, rejoice.
The rare bonus for a fighter winning by decision, which should become more frequent, by the way, but they had no choice, so they gave it to someone who won by decision tonight. But we'd all like to see that more often, I think.
Is somebody washing dishes? I hear they did. All right. So you?
All right. I don't know what's happening right now. So I saw the question. Jose, we'll start with you because me and AK will be discussing this on to the next one. What is next for Wonderboy after his big win tonight?
Well, in this perfect world, Stephen Thompson's knee is fine, and it was just like I don't know, some sort of freak nerve damage, and he doesn't have to sit on the shelf for another year. But until that happens, my fingers are going to be crossed, because I don't want someone of Stephen Thompson's skill and age to be out for that long again. So he called for the Leon Edwards fight. I doubt that happens, because I'm sure the UFC wants to book him against Hamzat Chimaev, but maybe they want Stephen Thompson's to stay ready just in case there's another COVID situation that happens and he could slide in against Chimaev or Leon Edwards. I know he called out Masvidal. I can almost guarantee you that won't happen. Not because Masvidal wouldn't take the fight, but just, well, Masvidal has told a lot of people, including myself and Pete Sakella, when we interviewed him at his Recuerdo launch party, that he wants to rematch Damian Maia. He wants to rematch Stephen Thompson. He wants to rematch everyone that's beaten him. But at this point in Masvidal's career, I think he's still looking for those big money fights, which is, of course, the Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman, the Nate Diaz fight. So I know Masvidal would take it at some point. It's probably right now. So I don't know. It's a good question. Off the top of my head, the welterweight division is like we said at the preview show, like we were talking about what Stephen Thompson was fighting for. He's pretty much going to be the only active welterweight in that upper echelon right now. So stay ready, see what happens, get your knee figured out. But I don't really have a name for him off the top of my head, just because there's so many fights that have to happen first.
I was going to you, Casey.
You know what? It's not my answer. It's from our YouTube commenter, Sandy Pham.
BMF versus NMF.
Yeah, that's what that's verbatim what Wonderboy said on his post-fight interview. He said at BMF and NMF. So that's, yeah, I'm cool with that. I just don't think Masvidal will take it right now.
What is Masvidal to take then?
Well, they said Colby. They said he thinks they're just angling some sort of fight with Colby. Yeah, something like that, which makes a lot of sense. I enjoyed the call out. I thought it, one, it's a very winnable fight for Thompson, which we know because he's won it before. So that's why I'm not sure how inclined people would be to watch it again, though it was 3 years ago. So I think for a lot of people, you know, they have the attention span of like 18 months. So maybe it'll seem like a fresh matchup for people. Maybe Masvidal's better than he was then. You know, he's definitely a much bigger star than he was then. So I understand the appeal of it. I'm not against that matchup. I'm just glancing at the rankings, sort of my own rankings right now. I think the Masvidal fight is likely because, like we said, we don't know if how long Wonderboy could be out. Hopefully nothing serious with his right leg, but it could be like till the summer, right? We don't know. And by then, Masvidal could be free and the whole division could look very different. Another possibility, another guy who just cannot get a fight, I think is ready, Ponzinibbio. I think Thompson and Ponzinibbio. Why do you shake your head, Casey?
Is Ponzinibbio
not even ranked?
Is he even like in the UFC? Like, when is the last time he fought?
He should be. Why is he not ranked? He should be.
How long has he been out for?
He's not.
Almost 2 years now.
Yeah, you want Ponzinibbio over a Masvidal rematch? Or are you just throwing out?
We've seen the Masvidal fight. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure Ponzinibbio is tied to a fight against the Leech, and he's down for it. According to Guillermo Cruz.
Oh, okay. Did we report on
this? It's just a rumor.
Is it a rumor? Okay, I like that matchup. The other one is, I don't know what's going on with this guy, but Nate Diaz.
To take away the nicest MF-er of the championship?
Exactly. The other nicest MF-er. Nate Diaz, of course, known for his...
Who's Michael Chiesa of fighting?
He is fighting somebody. I don't know who it is. But Chiesa said Penn has gotten to paper, and he's very excited for the fight. So, I don't know. My guess would be Damian Maia or Neil Magny. Those would be my two thoughts.
We'll see. I like the Maia one. I like the Maia one a lot. You know, two classy gentlemen, nice clash of styles. I can't even imagine how the fight would look. Such a clash of styles, but you know, you kind of like to see that. It's extreme grappling.
What's Magny up to these days? He fights everyone.
He's wanted the Chimaev fight for like 6 months.
He'd love the Wonderboy fight. So would Chiesa. Yeah. I don't know how much Wonderboy would want to fight Chiesa or.
What about it makes no sense ranking wise, but maybe age wise. What about a fight against Condit?
Yeah, I think that's cool. I think these are the kind of fights that Wonder Woman should be going
again,
for right now.
The UFC doesn't want fights that people want, so it doesn't matter.
now that we've said it,
I don't know. Yeah, like, I can tell you right now, Wonder Boy was pissed he had to take this fight.
Yeah,
with Jeff Neal, he was not happy.
Are you guys, everyone's throwing on these opponents that are way behind him in line, and with Wonder Boy's age and everything, like I only see a Masvidal fight or Leon Edwards fight, someone within one rank of him or above him.
Those are the ones that would make him happy.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, Wonder Boy's age. And like, come on, Wonder Boy's actually talking crap and, you know, calling people out now because he's so desperate to get those fights. So, I mean, as cool as, you know, fighting Curtis Condit or Ponzinibbio would be, because I just, you know, of course we want to see them fight. I just think we have probably only, what, three fights for Wonder Boy left at on a big stage in his in his career. So,
Listen, Casey, I've got a running prediction that one of these gentlemen, one of these brothers, is going to end up fighting inside the octagon, and maybe not in 2021, but if they do in 2021, why not have the classy Stephen Wonderboy Thompson welcome Jake Paul to the UFC? Maybe that's the big money. I did it. I'm just getting out of the way early. Let's talk about it. Thompson himself did address it during media day and said those guys talking all this crap is ludicrous. He can't believe that. I mean, so many fighters are even responding to these callouts. The word he used was they don't deserve to even be in discussion with some of these great MMA fighters. They are not worthy is the other word he used. So I don't know. He probably would not want to do it unless one of the Pauls guarantee a fat paycheck for him, a fat bonus. But otherwise, I don't know what fight. Like you guys said, maybe Masvidal is the one that he called for. Maybe that's the only fight that would really make him happy right now. Because otherwise, yeah, there's a lot of less appealing options for him as far as what he wants.
What if you saw a video of Jake Paul driving by Steve Wonderboy karate school and he's throwing water balloons at Steve Wonderboy?
Dad.
Yeah, his dad. And Wonderboy's like, I'll fight you in the octagon.
We got some really good angle. Thank goodness we had all these cameras around and got all these angles of that water.
Job.
Darn it.
Did we get good audio on this? Hello, check.
Wonderboy would Wonderboy would get on the upstate karate bus with a bunch of dodgeballs. Like that's just how he would react. He'd turn into like a dodgeball match.
I took it there.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
John Degnan, the Murano fight was Pettis' last fight in his UFC contract. What are the chances that Pettis tries out free agency, maybe head over to Bellator and join his brother? AK, your thoughts on this. Do you believe that we saw Anthony Pettis compete in the octagon for the final time tonight?
Oh, why you had to phrase it like that? Because I mean, answering the original question, I do think it's a super high chance that he talks. He's definitely probably already spoken to Bellator. So that I think the talks are there. I'm sure Bellator, some hush-hush negotiations. It just makes a lot of sense for him. Look, Donald Cerrone, his fight before this one, that was the first time he rematched someone that he'd already fought in the UFC. So I'm not counting Benson Henderson, of course. They fought WC and UFC. Cerrone is the first guy he fought twice in the UFC. He beat him twice. But I think in the back of his mind, there's that thought like, man, now I'm starting to cover ground that I've already covered. I fought a who's who at 155, 170, 145. He fought Max Holloway, you know. He knows that the best competition, I think, for him is still in the UFC. But there's also fresh options in Bellator and very good competition over there. It's a new thing. It's kind of a new stage for his career. Of course, his brother is over there. It's a very comfortable fit. I do wonder if he's just looking for something new. So to answer your question, Mike, do I think this is the last time he's fought in the UFC? I'm going to lean towards no. I think the option is there, but I think him and Dana and the matchmakers, I think they work something out. Maybe another 4-fight deal.
Interesting. Jose, agree or disagree?
I disagree. I think Anthony Pettis is going to either hop over to most likely Bellator to join his brother. He gets to wear all of his sponsors. I'm sure he can wear the logo of his new fight promotion or amateur promotion, whatever it is, and his new agency. I just think his brother has said it enough times where, like, he goes to the Bellator, he's already been treated better than he has been in the UFC. He's not lost in the shuffle. His brother's obviously there. He sees all the opportunities that Sergio is getting. So yeah, I would put money on him joining Bellator. Do I want him to join Bellator? I don't particularly care. Whatever makes him the most money, he's a prize fighter. And at this point of his career, he's like AK said, he's fought the who's who at 155. I selfishly wanted Anthony Pettis to welcome Michael Chandler to the UFC because I think at some point they had to have been champions at the same time together. So it would have been another one of those fun UFC versus Bellator fights. Like, well, it might not have been a fun fight when it happens, but the lead up would have been fun, kind of like when the Eddie Alvarez Anthony Pettis fight went down, or like the Gilbert Melendez Anthony Pettis fight when it was like kind of Strikeforce versus UFC. So yeah, I'm cool with whatever. If he wants to join PFL to make a run in $1 million before he hangs it up, that's cool too. But there are more fun fights for him in the UFC. But if he wants to make all that extra money, maybe go to Bellator so you can wear all your sponsors and all that stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if PFL happens just because I feel like his management team in PFL do not have a great relationship. Right. Citing Brennan Lochnane sort of being stuck in there during this pandemic when that guy was looking for fights, there was talks about lawsuits and all this stuff on Twitter. So I don't think PFL is an option at this point. I think one might be interesting because I think one would pay a lot of money for Pettis. But I think Bellator is the way to go. I think he gets a title shot maybe immediately, but at least in the like very foreseeable future. It's not going to happen in the UFC unless he wins like 10 fights in a row. But if he goes to Bellator and like fights Benson Henderson, like you suggested on Twitter, Jose gets a win there, you know, he's probably fighting for a belt or getting huge fights from there. And
if they want to, if this featherweight Grand Prix is over with and they want to do a lightweight Grand Prix, would not be like throw Anthony Pettis into that. I'm fine with that too, because then that takes the matchmaking out of it.
Question. Yeah, how do you promote? I do have a question though. How do you promote a third Henderson fight without the Showtime kick footage though? How do you do it? Right? It's hard. It'd be hard to bring up, right?
Well, you're also promoting a fight where a guy's down 2-0 too. And Henderson coming off a pretty good KO knockout. So I
have a lot of questions.
I'm sure Mike Goldberg, with his broadcasting brilliance in 2020 and 2021, will put that over with just his verbiage. He doesn't need anything else. He's been so good in 2020, right?
No,
he would put that over. You don't need any video. I'm very sarcastic.
We need him and Rogan back together. I'll tell you something. That is a team. That is what I want in my broadcast in 2021. I want Rogan.
Rogan wasn't even there tonight, and now we're still talking about Rogan. God dang it!
I know, we have to. He's living rent free. He's living rent free up here. What can I say? He's got, you know, he's living rent free.
Sign the Bellator, vacate the belt, little Pitbull, and have big Pitbull versus Pettis for the 155 title.
There you go.
Make it happen.
So Casey, you think we did see the last of Pettis in the octagon tonight?
Yes, sir. I do believe that.
Oh.
What if he fights?
I mean, they put him on the prelims. You know, they put Pettis on the prelims. Remember when Andre Arlovski featured prelim, my bad.
sweet featured prelim.
So in a way, he headlined.
Pettis can fight a welterweight. Pettis can fight a welterweight in Bellator too.
Dude, actually,
imagine him versus MVP.
No, I was going to Lima.
A lot of good matchups.
I was going Dougie Limes versus Pettis.
I think Lima's probably going to fight Larkin.
Okay,
and then I think Pettis MVP for number one contender. Sign me up. Co-main event. So they're all just around each other. Like, you're welcome, Scott Coker.
Mike, you think he's going? You think he's going to Bellator?
Oh, God. I think he's already packing his bags.
Dang. I think the UFC knows that, too. Yeah.
I think UFC PR is going to drive to the airport.
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of Rufus Sport went signed over to Bellator in the next 12 months.
They got a bunch over there already.
So. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Interesting 2021.
Yeah, we're going to see Dylan Danis versus Pettis soon.
Oh,
sure.
So we can put Dylan Danis in the you know, the headline now.
All right, what else we got?
All right.
What do we got? Bring up fire. Fire.
Here's a fire. It's from the same commenter.
I mean, what was up with Neil constantly burping during the fight?
They were suggesting it might have been something he drank or something before, but I don't know about you guys. I'm out of shape, so when I try to do any exercise, I get gassy sometimes. Sometimes you get nauseous, you want to burp, you want to puke. I mean, we've seen that happen to fighters, and Neil is certainly competing in a contest far more athletic than anything I've ever done in my life. So I wasn't surprised at all. I just thought he got a little gassy, and so he's got to burp it out.
I didn't even notice. I've been watching lately. If I'm not there, I've been watching the fights on mute with no commentary. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even hear it. Well,
you're missing the best part.
It was very loud.
It was. I feel like they had a microphone like inside Jeff Neal's mouth. It was awesome.
Yeah. Maybe that's why Wonder Boy was high-fiving him so much. He was just like, good burp, push, bro.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it.
You didn't notice it?
I didn't notice it. I
heard a good 4 or 5 times. Like him just.
My wife and my son stayed up a little bit later. So they were like falling asleep, so I had to turn down the volume a little bit, so I didn't notice it.
Yeah, I think the commenters, Bisping even talked about it on the broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They mentioned the drink thing. They said, maybe he drank something weird before the fight. I'm like, I don't know. I think it's you get gassy. You exercise, you get gassy. Again, not that I would know, but I never exercise, obviously. So.
All right, moving on to the people's main event.
Oh.
How'd y'all score Michelle Baheda versus Chaos Williams? Good question from Sandy Pham. I'll start with this one. I scored it. I believe my exact tweet was 29-28 Pajeda, but I'm 1.5% confident in that pick. I had no idea how to score it. No clue. I had no idea how to score the first round. I felt like the second round was a Pajeda round, and the third round was really close. So I had no clue. But just on my gut and what I saw briefly without going back and checking anything out more frame by frame, I scored it for Pajeda. But if you scored it for Williams, I have no issue with that. How did you score it, Jose?
I scored for Pereira, but because you guys have all watched fights live, octagon side, and it just sounds a lot different than watching through your TV. So I just think Michelle Pereira was so mobile, and he was just like – so when I think about how these fights are scored, I don't particularly think about like I have how I would score it, but then I try to think about how the judge would score it because it's just different being there live. Like we've seen fights where it just – we're just baffled at how a judge could score. Like you all thought Justin Gaethje clearly lost the first round against Khabib. But there, a lot of people thought Justin Gaethje did enough to win just because we heard all of the punches land and all of the movement around and all of the checked kicks and everything. So it just sounds different. So I just think the judges being there live, I assumed they would give it to Pereira, and I actually scored it for Michelle Pereira, but I don't disagree with you if you think Chaos Williams won. I don't think it was a robbery by any means. It was a very close fight, and as 8K says, not all close fights are robberies.
He does say that. That's his thing.
All close fights are. Yes, I do say that.
As people say, that is what he says.
That is why I started the robbery review series. Of course, every time I do a robbery review, you don't even need to read the article. I'm essentially just saying that the fight was a robbery. It's in the headline, right? It's in the headline. Obviously, I'm calling every fight a robbery. I had a 29-28 Williams, but I had no problem with the final verdict. It really came down to that second round. The strikes that stood out most to me were every time Williams was able to catch Pereira's leg and land like a kind of overhand right. Those for me were like the biggest shots of the fight. So those I thought were the most impactful. But again, I'm not there. I can't really tell. I'm not feeling it and hearing it. He was doing a good job with leg kicks too. I think Pereira did have, I think even not just the TV stats, but I think if you go to UFC stats.com, I believe that he did have the advantage in total strikes, but it was so close. I have no problem with Pereira winning. He really, there was a lot of activity, which people like. And I know the second round, some people decided it on that very late choke attempt by Pereira. So people thought he may have stolen the round with that submission attempt, which I guess so. I can't argue against that. And it was one of the most definitive moments of the fight.
That choke was in deep, man.
But,
that choke was in deep.
People said 10, 15 more seconds, it might have just been over. Might not even talk about judging right now, right? So if that is what counts to people, then for sure. But I think there was nothing wrong with the Pereira win. I went with Williams, but again, I'd have to rewatch the fight. I might see it the other way. It was really close.
Casey,
I thought it was pretty easy to score. I had Williams winning the first round. Chaos winning in a very non-chaotic round in round one. And then the second round was very close until that last 5 seconds when Pereira took his back and put a choke in, and basically he was saved by the bell. So without a doubt, he wins that round. I mean, without a doubt. And then the third round, Pereira.
Close fight. Close fight. However you scored it, I have no issue with it.
Were we disappointed?
We
guaranteed some kind of 50K bonus for someone, and we got...
I don't want a kind of Edler Demolidor. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Bless him, he's winning fights in the UFC. That is really the most important thing. Other than being a veteran who gets a lot of bonuses. If you're a veteran who gets like one bonus every, you know, two or three fights, you'll be fine. You know, you'll be fine. You're going to stick around if the company likes you. And Pereira could have gone down that road, honestly. I don't know how much security there is. I don't know his relationship with the company. So maybe he could have gone down that road, just being a super action fighter, win or lose, doing crazy stuff. But I also kind of like him showing a new side of himself. I don't like people doing their old same tricks over and over again. And he got the win, which I guess is the most important thing.
The same
thing,
trick though. Being entertaining? Is that a trick, being entertaining?
I just mean if you watch like his first two or three fights and some of his fights, you know, on the before he went came to the UFC, he has the routine. He has an actual like tumbling routine that he'll do, which is, I think, is why when Tristan Connolly fought him, he just like avoided it. Tristan Connolly was just like, okay, all right, yep, okay, good, it's over. I'm going in. Can we fight now?
Was not even a cornerman during that fight.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, that's why he missed weight.
He had like no cornerman. He missed weight. Yeah. It was like Connolly, it was in Vancouver. Yeah. Like, I feel like if Tristan Connolly and Michelle Pereira ran it back 10 times, like that was like a perfect storm of just awfulness for him that whole fight.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And people still give him a crap. And like, yeah, like Jose said, like there was a lot of circumstances why he
lost. He lost fair and square. Like, no one's arguing that was a bad decision, but there was a lot going into that fight.
Though, Casey, you're right, though. Anyone who's been, there was a lot of people who were giving people crap, even after his UFC debut when he won that amazing fight with
Roberts.
What a clown he is. Any of those people, I don't want to hear you complain that. I don't hear any of those people say that this fight was boring then, because you got what you wanted. All right. You wanted him to show his technical skills. He did. And again, close fight, but officially he won it. He does really have great technical skills, though. I think you could even see that in the fights where he was clowning. I mentioned this in the preview. I'm like, underneath all that, you can't do all that stuff unless you have really strong fundamental skills, which he has. And he's relying on that more, and he fought a really smart fight tonight. And I still think this guy's – I know he's been around for a long time. He has a lot more fights than I think people think, but I still think he can be a top 10 guy. I'm a believer.
Why couldn't he be?
He's huge.
He definitely could. Like he throws punches so fast. Like they come from so far away. He snaps your neck back. I don't know if he's gonna just dust someone with his punching, but he's for sure gonna just cause what, like, all of his opponents are just gonna be all bruised up at the end of it.
I haven't seen this question, but what Jose mentioned earlier, when Jeff Neal comes back and, you know, fixes up his bruises and all his cuts and everything, you say he's gonna decapitate somebody. Michelle Pereira and Jeff Neal.
Sure.
I'd be into that.
That sounds sexy.
Sign my
unless
ass.
They wanna unless they want to rebook Neil on Neil.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Oh please, please.
He gets, say he gets. We all say he gets the loser of Chiesa and whoever this mystery opponent is, because he's been calling for he called for Chiesa for a while too. So I think before we book Jeff Neal, a few fights have to happen first.
He wants Pettis. I mean, he definitely called for Pettis after, but like I said, we don't know if that's even possible.
3 months. That was a waste of a call out. Waste. Hated it. Did not like it at all.
What is in 2 weeks too?
That was weird.
In Ryzen. Ryzen. I'm gonna.
Hey, Pettis is a free agent. Maybe we don't know, man.
You sign to Ryzen. I'll take steroids and get cut, and then I'll fight you on New Year's Eve.
I dig it. Pajeda, by the way, my favorite visual of the entire night was Chaos staring down Pajeda as he was walking to the octagon.
The whole time. He was gleefully dancing and then breakdancing.
Oh, that was so great. And poor Joe Martinez is like trying not to stare at Chaos. You could tell he like could feel the stare, and he's just trying to like keep himself busy and look at his card. But he was terrified in that moment, as he should have been.
I would be.
I wasn't too big on the commentary tonight, but I thought Bisping made a great point about Williams, Chaos, just staring. He goes, "That's very tiring to stare at someone for that long." I was like, "Yeah, you're right." Yeah, just like stare at someone for like, because like Pereira kind of took his time. You know, he hugged everyone like 5 times before getting in the cage, and he must have been staring. He must have been staring at Pereira for a good like, without blinking. I don't know. Yeah, a good like 5 minutes. It felt like
his eyes were probably starting to water. They were probably like water and tremble. And then I think if it had gone any longer, tears would have literally come from his face. But Michelle Pajeda, he's only 27 years. I keep thinking he's older than he is. He's only 27 years old. Tonight was his 38th pro fight. So it took him over 30 fights just to get to the UFC. So yeah, I mean, do I think he can be a contender? Yes. But I see why people might be skeptical, right? I mean, 30 something fights before making to the UFC, if it, you know, people would ask if it hasn't happened, you know, why does it take so long?
That, right? He's on that Jordan Mean trajectory at that point.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
I want to see him. I want to see Pereira versus keep moving him up.
Yeah. There are fun Thank fights you, I want to have seen, but it doesn't Thanks, make Sandy sense Fam. Right now for his career.
Yeah. I mean, Pereira versus anybody, I'm okay with.
Yeah.
Was the temporary tattoo on Aldo's chest some kind of political message?
It was a Navy decal, and it was where he did a lot of his boxing sparring. So I don't know if it was a political statement, but it was at least a shout out to, because he posted about it in November. Guillermo was tweeting about it too. So if you want the details on the patch, you can go spot it. You can go scope out Guillermo's Twitter.
You know what? I'm kind of bummed. I thought he snuck in a sponsor. I was hoping he made an extra, you know, extra 25K just for putting a little tattoo on him. But all
right. Well, maybe someone else will now. You know, maybe this sets a precedent, Casey. Right? Like, hey, that worked. He got that one in there.
Thank you.
Whatever works for it. He looked pretty damn good tonight. Oh,
it's a Caro Man 91.
Do you think that Marlon's durability is gone? Ooh. He took a lot of shots in the Cejudo fight, and he just seems like he got rocked very easily today. Jose, you are excited. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to start this. And I was thinking about this because, like, I thought when the first happened, I was like, well, I think it just shows he came back too quickly after getting wheel kicked by Corey Sandhagen. But then I was doing Twitter reacts, and I was like, so I see a lot of what his fellow UFC fighters are saying. And Aljamain Sterling made a very good point. Where if you look at Marlon Moraes' UFC run, he has a bunch of first-round knockouts. And then outside of that, he has a bunch of victories that aren't overly exciting or they're very close. And Aljamain Sterling says, if you don't get crushed by Marlon Moraes in one round, this is the fight you're going to get. You're either going to knock him out later on, or it's going to be kind of a boring, close fight. So he's saying he's very good. He's very skilled, but he's not the world beater that he was. And Aljamain Sterling is on record a few times saying he didn't really take Marlon Moraes seriously going into their fight when he got head kicked. And if they run it back, he would beat him. He gives him all the props in the world for head kicking him and making him do the dab. But he made a lot of good points on Twitter where he goes, this is what a Marlon Moraes fight is. You're either going to get – the fight is either going to end early from either side, or it's going to be a very close fight, and it's probably going to be controversial at the end. I hadn't thought about it at all because I wasn't really looking back on Myles Murray's career up until I read these tweets. But I thought Aljamain Sterling made a very good point when he was live tweeting this fight about a fighter that he has a lot of experience training for and being around that. Because remember, Myles Murray's trained up in the New Jersey area for a while, so I'm sure they've been around the same training partners a bit too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But he's what, 1-3 since he's left Jersey now?
Yep.
The numbers do not lie. Jose, you are correct. His UFC debut, Rafa Sunsau, split decision loss. Yep. His next fight, John Dodson, split decision win. Yep. 3 straight first round finishes. Aljamain Sterling, Jimmy Rivera, the Sunsau rematch. Loses to Henry Cejudo after kind of gassing out in the third round. And then split decision win over Aldo. And then now these two losses. So
that's literally what Aljamain said. Aljamain's like, if he doesn't beat you in the first round, you're going to get the Dodson, like a Dodson type or Aldo type fight.
But yeah, addressing the durability thing, Mike, we kind of talked about this. You brought this up a bit last week with Ferguson, like guys who have had these kind of mileage on them. You kind of want to wonder, what if they took like 8 months off or a year off? What if they had that luxury that they could do that? Does it come back to some degree? It never comes back all the way. I don't think so. I think when you've been fighting as long as these guys have, that you're never going to be as durable as you were 3 or 4 years ago, right? It's just not how it works. But can you get back some of that toughness? Can you get back, again, your brain cells and your chin or whatever it is, at least you getting knocked out? Can some of that come back? I think it can. So, Mike, I don't know what you're doing for our matchup show, but I'm definitely going to at least suggest I would like to see Marlon Moraes take some time off. I don't know if that solves anything. It could be more of a defensive issue than anything, right? Decision making, because I liked his plan in this fight. I think taking the fight to the ground right away was the way to go. Mm-hmm. And then once he started going to a slugfest, I was just like, oh boy, I don't know if this is a good idea, because Rob Font can bang. So it might have nothing to do with the chin, right? Could have been a tactical thing, but I do think some time off would be really good, at least 6 months, just to recover both physically and mentally and figure out what kind of fighter he wants to be, because that was hard to watch tonight. He got hurt real bad.
Yes, and if you want to say that it's a durability thing, I'm not going to argue with you, because he took a beating in the Cejudo fight, and a lot of people felt like that was kind of like, I'm not going to say that this is exact, but this is a quote I keep hearing: Cejudo stole his soul that night and changed him forever, which there might be some truth to that. I don't really know. I'm not in the mind of Marlon Moraes. However, I do not want any of that to take away from what Rob Font did tonight. That dude, after a year away, recovering from another major injury. I mean, he's gone. We're talking about Wonderboy going through major injury after major injury. Rob Font's done this too. He's had like multiple year long layoffs. And every time he's gotten put in this position with a big opponent and a big name, John Lineker didn't do very well. Pedro Munhoz did not do very well. Rafael Sunsau did not do very well. Gets another opportunity against the number 3 guy in the world, and he put his ass away and did it very impressively. So we've been waiting for years for Rob Font to get that like signature win. Now he's got it, and people are very excited. Now he called out TJ Dillashaw. Everybody called out TJ Dillashaw tonight, which I love. And I'm hoping that's a question from the people tonight, because I feel like the Dillashaw thing became a huge storyline tonight, didn't it?
It's because his suspension is going to be up. I think it started with Corey Sandhagen on Fight Island when he dropped the name after he head kicked Myles Murray. So TJ Dillashaw is still a big name. His knockout loss was not at bantamweight. Let's not forget that. He never lost his title inside the octagon. He lost because he was an idiot and took a bunch of illegal substances and got it taken away from him. So he's going to continue to talk all that. Like, if you look at his tweets, he's like, that's still my belt, this and that. So still a big name. He's obviously not ranked right now. But if you want a fast path to a title shot, beating the guy that technically never lost it is the fastest, probably the fastest way, in my opinion.
Yeah. Talk about a guy who I wonder how he's going to look after a long layoff. Again, his health wise, it's probably done him wonders to not have competed during this time. Right. And everyone's still talking about him. So it was, you never, want to be exposed as a cheater, unfortunately. But I think for him, I'm sure he's like, well, this is the best I can make of this bad situation I created for myself, because I feel good. I'm healthy. I'm probably still in amazing shape, still relatively young. And everyone's still talking about me as if I fought this year. People are calling me out. So that's fantastic for him. I want to big ups your boy, Rob Font, a little bit more, Mike. He is Mr. December man. He is Mr. December. December 2016, first round knockout of Matt Schnell. And then his last three fights have all been in December because, like we said, there's been some breaks. Unanimous decision win over Sergio Pettis. Unanimous decision win over Ricky Simon. And now December 19th, 2020, first round TKO Marlon Moraes. So do not fight Rob Font in December at bantamweights. You do not want this. You do not want this man this month.
Casey, let me ask you this.
Rob Font has their horn.
Nice. Yeah. Casey, I'm going to start with you, and we're going to go around because if it's not a question, we're going to make it. We're going to get the people fired up here. If you're the UFC matchmakers and the whole world at this point is calling out TJ Dillashaw, we thought Dillashaw. I thought Dillashaw versus Sandhagen was a no-brainer. I cannot believe they didn't make that fight. Although I'm cool with the Edgar Sandhagen fight. TJ Dillashaw versus blank. What are you going with?
Jose Aldo.
Jose?
I agree. I like the Font fight, but I just think Font's not there yet. That could very well be a fight down the road, but I think you said it best. He's kind of faltered in those big name fights up until right now. If Marlon had won, I think Marlon versus TJ would also be a fun scrap. But I think Jose Aldo is the fight to make. Unless, for whatever reason, if the UFC is still gung-ho on a Uriah Faber being a thing in 2021, then if they want to book that fight. But no, I don't think anyone wants to see that in 2021. So, yeah, Aldo versus Dillashaw for number one contender is the fight to make, in my opinion.
I actually think Faber is the fight to make. I really do. I think that's the fight to make. If TJ Dillashaw comes back and wins one fight, he's fighting for the title. Doesn't matter who it's against. I think he's fighting for the belt no matter what. Just because he's a name and people feel a certain way about him, he creates some sort of reaction, mostly negative, but there are some people who really like to watch TJ Dillashaw fight. There is a rivalry here between these two guys that has been going on for seemingly forever. And part of me just wants this shit to end. Okay, just let these guys fight. I'm tired of hearing Uriah talk about it. I'm tired of hearing TJ Dillashaw talk about it. I'm tired of hearing Cody Garbrandt talk about it. Just let them fight. Do it now. Let's just get it over with. People will watch it. It'll be fun. The build to that fight will be a lot of fun. You'll get to see angry Uriah Faber. You'll get to see kind of sarcastic and that look on TJ Dillashaw's eyes that people are just like, oh, I can't stand this guy. And that creates viewership. So if you're going to do it, just do it. Just get it done. Let Aldo fight Rob Font. I like that fight. And there you go. That's what I think should happen. I mean, honestly, I think TJ could fight anybody. Just let him fight Uriah. Give it a just let's move on with this rivalry for the love of God. AK, what do you think?
Oh, I thought you were suggesting Aldo versus Uriah.
No.
No, Dillashaw.
Oh, pay attention, AK.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Candy Lee. Pay attention, Candy.
I'm on the social.
That's why I was raising my eyebrow. I'm like, I guess so. I'm on the social media, guys. I'm TikToking here. The same. You know how it is, guys. You know,
TikToking.
That's what we do. I'm a TikToking. That's what it is. Right? That's what the kids call it, right? Mm-hmm.
On my smartphone. That's how they talk to you.
I'll tell you, I kind of still want to see this one get run back. If Cruz beats Casey Kenney, I kind of still want to see Cruz and Dillashaw go at it again.
I'm okay with that one too.
I always want to run it back.
I only want that rematch if it's for a belt.
You know what?
That's one of when people list the best fights ever. I think that's left off a lot. That fight ruled.
It's a great fight. It's an amazing fight. It's mesmerizing.
And it was on Fox Sports 1. It wasn't even on Fox. It was.
That's right.
What beautiful city was that in? What beautiful city?
That was the cold tundra of Boston.
I went with the buddy who drank too much before the card and he fell asleep through the main event.
Jesus. At the arena?
At the arena.
Ooh, were you at that fight, Casey?
Yes, sir.
That fight ruled. I was backstage for most of it. That was the fight card. Matt Mitrione's eyeball fell out of his head.
I remember that.
Oh. Only in Boston.
You know what?
I remember because I was doing the interviews and I had a cameraman. He was like an old classmate who had never really done MMA. And he was like, does this happen all the time? Do people just lose eyeballs and limbs? I was like, yeah, this is what happened.
It's normal.
It's not every day, but yeah, a couple times a year.
Only the good ones.
Yeah. That's why God gave you two eyes, man. Come on. I think, Mike, you made a great point. I really like that, actually, about TJ versus Faber. Because this actually is – okay. If TJ doesn't have a giant ego, you take the Faber fight. Because you've been out for a while. That's a super winnable fight. You're going to get lots of – you actually probably get more hype and press for that fight than you would to fight freaking Jose Aldo, which we know is a much tougher fight at this time. So, yeah, I absolutely think you're right. If I'm TJ Dillashaw, yeah, you definitely do try to do the paper fight because you need a W. You need to remind people that you're a freaking badass. And, you know, and TJ likes talking crap, so it's a good chance for him to talk crap. So, yeah, that is the fight to make, sir.
Piotr Jan beat up Faber and got a title shot right afterwards.
No, exactly. I believe, yeah. And like you said, you should say TJ just needs a win. That's all. You know, so a win against Faber, a win against Aldo, take the easier one. A win's a win. That's what AK says, right? A win's a win.
What if Faber beat him? Can you imagine that?
What, there you go. See, if Aldo beats TJ, that's cool. Oh, cool. If Faber beats TJ, good Lord.
Wild. Another title freaking shot for Faber. One more time.
Oh, man. All right. What else we got?
All right.
Good win for Rob Font, though.
Sorry, somebody behind on these questions.
Oh, that's where this discussion spawned from.
Yeah.
Yes. But Font's call out was like classic Font call out. It was like, you know, I know TJ Dillashaw's there, but he's like, but I don't care. Whoever the UFC gives me. Like him and Kate are exactly the same. It's great. That New England Patriots mindset. Man.
Back in the like, if Rob Font and Calvin Kattar get title shots in 2021, like, good for New England MMA. Like, they've needed that for a while.
Good questions today.
Darren Seska, so did this main event tell you anything about Jeff Neal's ceiling, or do you think it's still too early to tell?
Who's Jeff Neal?
Oh, stop it. Such a stickler. Darren Seska, we all know who you're talking about. I'm sorry. Jose might not answer your question because he didn't spell Jeff Neal perfectly, all right? But I will gladly answer. By the way, we're getting some great questions. It probably helps that the show is happening at 11, just past 11 Eastern time and not freaking like 2:30 in the morning. Though for those of you guys who are here at those crazy times, of course, you guys are the friggin' best and you still bring it. But these are really good questions. Darren, yeah. I'll say it's still too early to tell. There's just nobody like Wonderboy. There's nobody like Wonderboy. I don't know. Wonderboy turns really great looking prospects into, you know, people who, if you were seeing them fight for the first time, if you had never seen Neal fight before and you watched his performance, you'd be like, why isn't this guy punching more? Why is he having so much trouble? Why is he getting up against the cage? We can't do anything there. And that's just how Wonderboy is. There's nobody who can emulate that style. There's nobody who can prepare you for that. Even giving 25 minutes to try and figure him out, Neal couldn't do it. So if you want to take something away from that, maybe he needs to, you know, he just doesn't have the striking vocabulary to deal with someone like Thompson right now. And maybe he never will. But that fits a lot of people. There's a lot of people who couldn't figure out Wonderboy. And I don't think that necessarily speaks ill of their chances of becoming a champion. So I'm kind of cheesing the question. I'm kind of on the fence about it, but I'll go with a hard no. Losing to Wonderboy does not tell us what Neal's ceiling is. I still think it's very high. Let me put it that way. But this was a learning experience.
I would agree. I don't know. There's not much more to add to that, AK. I thought you nailed it. Casey, go ahead.
I'm gonna have to kind of go the other way. I think we did see a ceiling with Jeff Neal tonight, unless we got to remember he is coming back from a life-threatening injury. So we just don't know how much that affected his training. Maybe he's a different fighter now. Maybe he just doesn't have the same strength, the same cardio now. Dude, he was in the hospital. He was in the ICU. I mean, he didn't twist his ankle. You know, he didn't get, you know, I mean, he was on life. I don't know. It was really bad. So I have to take that into account. And if I do take that into account, is he just a different fighter completely? Is he just not the same guy anymore? I really hope that's not true. That would be super unfortunate and just major sucky. And I'm just hoping it was an off night for him in a sense, and it wasn't, had nothing to do with the his illness. And also, what was the story on his coach, Syed? What happened?
That's what I was gonna bring up.
Yeah, because to me,
he was sick.
Just sick. We don't know. Just sick. Because Fortis and May had a bad night tonight. Unfortunately,
yeah, true. Morano also had to, also had to go with Noah.
And you could tell that the guy, whoever was talking to them, that's not the normal guy. It was just kind of like a buddy going, "Hey, man, you got to win." Just like, you know. So there were a couple circumstances with Neil that I don't know. So, but if I'm assuming if he was at 100% tonight. That was a bit of a ceiling fight for Neil, unfortunately, I think.
I think not having Safe in his corner definitely affected him.
I hope it did affect him in a sense, because I was expecting more from him tonight.
And how about Alex Morono? Goes in there, has a war with Anthony Pettis, and then is in the corner of Jeff Neil in the main event. I mean, what a guy.
What a man.
Incredible.
Like that guy.
Incredible.
What a guy.
He did not. He did not need a minute to himself, as they say in the fight game.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
Good call, Darren.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time: the roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I lost the question. I cannot find it. But basically the question was, what do we think about Jerron Wynn? Basically, I saw basically like 20 different versions of Jerron Wynn. He won the fight, but man, I've never seen so much negativity to a guy that won the fight.
All right, Jose, we'll begin with you. Your thoughts on Jerron Wynn's performance tonight and some of the reactions we've seen, because the Twitterverse has not been very, very kind to Mr. Jerron Wynn.
Felt like a guy who probably needed a win to keep his job. Like at the end of the day, we say it all the time, like getting these bonuses and getting all this is nice, and getting these number one contender fights and big names. You win, you get the rest of your paycheck. So, A, good on Jerron Wynn for getting the rest of his paycheck. Number two, good on Jerron Wynn for probably keeping his job, at least for another fight. Like, we've seen this a million times before. I'm not comparing these fighters, like, in terms of their talent or like or about them, but like remember when like Overeem like desperately needed a win after like his knockout loss to Bigfoot and his USADA suspension, and he was just not the same type of fighter, and they gave him all this money, and then he goes out there and fights Frank Mir at UFC 169, and then it was just not a great fight. Like even Dana White was just like roasting him in the post fight press conference. So we've seen this before. You win so you can keep your job and you can move forward. So it didn't surprise me at all. If anything, it showed Jerron Wynn was very aware about the status of his career after missing weight and losing badly in his last few fights. So yeah, keeps his job. Good on him. In terms of the fallout from the fans, as expected. I mean, we just got like the most epic card of all time in the last week, and then Jerron Wynn is fighting like he did this weekend, which I'm not knocking him. Like I said, like he knew what needed to be done and he got it done. It just wasn't the most exciting fight. And I think MMA fans might have been a little spoiled in the last few weeks. But again, he's like a Division I All-American wrestler, and he just wrestled for two rounds or tried to wrestle one round and then wrestled for two rounds. So yeah, well, what else can you say?
Why was that fight at 195? I missed the news on that.
There was a little bit of short notice for Ahoyo. It was about 3 weeks. So I think it was to help out Ahoyo. And also Wynn making 185 hasn't been particularly enjoyable for him either. Okay. So, but I believe it was to accommodate Ahoyo. I think that was the point.
Okay. Is Ahoyo normally a middleweight?
I think he's normally middleweight. Yes. I don't think there's an issue. I think it's just because he took it on short notice. We always say when guys take things on short notice, we wish they would negotiate catch weights more. But I will say I think we all know he looked effing huge in there. So I don't know how we can criticize Jerron Wynn that much. He did what he had to do to survive against a guy who looked like a foot taller than him. and who was everyone hitting him quite a bit.
That's gonna be hard.
I know, it's true.
He needs his career. Yeah.
Five six, and like he's in the same weight class as Israel Adesanya, who's like 6'3".
That's ridiculous. He has to, but he just might not have the body type that can make 170. He's talked about it before. It's been asked many times. Can you make 170? And he's said it's possible, but it's not something he plans to do. I think he thought he'd have a nice run at 185 first.
Like, isn't he the same height as Connor?
Probably. He's very short, but his body is the body of a 185er. Yeah. That's the problem. Yeah. I don't know if 170, he'd have to have a dramatic body change, which probably would not be healthy for him.
He got to the UFC being a 205er.
Yeah.
He looks like Pat Barry at heavyweight. Like he's just thick.
He did what he had to do to survive. If anything, this was a nightmare scenario for Ahoyo, who, yes, he did them a favor by taking this fight on short notice, but he's just had incredibly bad luck. He's now 0-2. He's had several fight cancellations. This was his first fight since November 2019. He's had a bunch of fight cancellations, because of him withdrawing and his opponents withdrawing. So I hope the UFC would cut him some slack. Again, he kind of did them a favor, but you know, with all this talk of impending cuts and just how bad the fight was, I don't know. I don't know if Ahoyo gets brought back, unfortunately. So it was really a nightmare scenario for him. Wynn did what he had to do, but he's probably on a fairly short leash. Like the next time negotiations come around for Wynn, he's not going to have a lot of leverage if this is how he's going to keep winning fights. But he did what he had to do, like you said, to get that. You got to get that other check, right? That's all that really matters.
I'd be curious how the commentary would have been if it wasn't Daniel Cormier.
I was about to say, I think DC did win a disservice tonight, honestly.
I agree.
Because it felt like his mom, kind of like, my mom says I'm cool. I don't know. It was bad.
For those of you who aren't aware, like, when Daniel Cormier was talking about what it would be like to commentate a Khabib fight, like, if Khabib would lose, like, what would it be like? And the person he compared Khabib to was Jaron Wynn. He goes, it's hard to call Jaron Wynn fights. And even John Anik was like, have you ever, like, and then I asked John Anik about DC commentating Khabib, and John Anik was like, have you ever seen him commentate Jaron Wynn fight? Like, it was brought up twice. Like, that's how close Jaron Wynn and Daniel Cormier are in terms of their training. Like, there's, if you go to the, I can't remember the YouTube page, so I apologize, I don't plug it, but they do like that documentary series about AKA, and they're always, like, wrestling day is just all Jaron Wynn and Daniel Cormier. So that's how close they are.
I thought Jaron's game plan was spot on. I mean, if you've paid attention to Ahoyo's career to this point, the guy is a monster. He's huge. He's powerful. And most of his wins are very quick wins. But if you get him into the second round, especially deep into the second round, and you saw it in the Muniz fight, he gasses badly, badly. So Jaron was just like, all right, I'm just going to keep putting your ass down and making you get back up. As soon as you get back up, yeah, I'll take a shot and put you right back down. And like midway through the second round, Ahoyo was done. He was so done. And then by round three, it was nothing he could do. So Jaron did what he had to do. The guy, I mean, yeah. There is no one on this card who needed a win more than Jaron Wynn tonight, if we're being honest. Like, he was the guy with everything on the line. He lost, he was gone, and there was no way around it. He knew it, DC knew it, everybody knew it. And he got the win. So there you go. I had no issue with how he fought. It is very strange seeing him compete, though.
Oh, I love especially that. Especially for a guy. That's my favorite part about him.
So much hype coming in, too. It's so much hype coming in here, and he gets into a slugfest with Eric Spicely in his UFC
debut. That was so fun. That was the first fight of the night.
It was fun.
Eric Spicely never recovered and got cut because he couldn't recover.
A year later, he had suffering
from depression because of concussion fallout and CTE. Like, and Eric Spicely, I've said it a million times, he's from Rhode Island, like where I'm from. The martial arts community, the jiu-jitsu community, put Eric Spicely on a pedestal. Like, he does so much for that community and that world. So him getting cut was a huge blow for the Rhode Island martial arts scene, and he never recovered. So Jaron Wynn can fight. He's a good fighter. He just missed his weight, and he's just not – we've all heard it. He's not as – what's the word?
Discipline?
It's hard to keep him in – like, he has the Johnny – maybe he might have the Johnny Hendricks type syndrome where when he's not in one fight camp, he's super out of shape. Discipline, like, we've all heard those stories. Yeah. So if Jaron Wynn gets it all together, he could be a great fighter. The only detriment is he might be a little too short for the division.
The Spicely fight was crazy. I was a little worried watching that fight, though, because Eric Spicely is a good fighter. And he took that fight on super short notice. But Eric Spicely is not a striker. Like, he's not a striker. And he got into a slugfest with Eric Spicely. It was super fun. Don't get me wrong. It was a great fight.
That was a short notice fight, too. That's how he got back to the UFC.
Yeah. So I think freaking Duran. Yeah. Duran went had like three different opponents for that fight. Then he fought Darren Stewart in Boston. Super close fight. He did miss weight, but it was a very close fight. He didn't get the doors blown off him. Gerald Meerschaert fight was a very competitive fight until the end.
Bob Cook was not happy after Duran Wynn's loss to Darren Stewart.
No, he was not.
I'm sure everyone. Were you at that? No, I was there for. I was going to say, were you at the fight? I was there for that fight. Back like everyone hurt. Did you? I'm sure you audibly heard Bob Cook talk.
Oh yeah,
everyone heard him. Maybe just like laying into him at the end of it. I was like, I don't think you should be doing this close to the media tent, my guy. Like, this is just kind of embarrassing. Maybe it was on purpose to embarrass him. Like, good coaches try to embarrass their fighters to get them back in shape. But then, like you said, Jeremy Charles' fight looked like a guy who was really short and has like six fights against a guy who has 1,000 fights and is probably the size for the division.
And Gerald Meerschaert he had a big issue with Duran Wynn heading into that fight, but Meerschaert has praised Duran Wynn ever since, said he surprised him with how tough he was. I mean, Meerschaert got the finish in the end, but still. But it was a pivotal win for him. He needed to get it done, and he did.
I actually don't think there's an issue of Wynn's height or anything. He's not too small for the division. I mean, obviously, he's a 185er. He needs to make the weight. He needs to be more disciplined in between camps. He just needs more. I was just expecting more from him coming into the UFC, and I don't know if he's hit a ceiling or just like the discipline thing, but like him just doing wrestling and ground and pound is enough to go very far in the middleweight division. But unfortunately, he's just doing the wrestling without the ground and pound. And
that was interesting tonight.
Yeah,
it's so. Like we all heard, like Casey, I'm sure because you've been around all these guys forever. We all heard of Daniel Cormier eventually making the jump to MMA. Even before he was in Strikeforce, because he was the Olympic wrestling captain, main training partner with Kane. But between when he ended his wrestling career and when he actually made his MMA debut, there was a gap. UFC fans' introduction to Daniel Cormier was probably when he was on Josh Koscheck's coaching staff on The Ultimate Fighter. And I don't even think did he even have an MMA fight at that point? So Daniel Cormier took time, and I just feel like maybe Duran Wynn may have rushed into the UFC a little too soon. I don't know. But like Casey said, he needs to do more than just wrestle.
There are many reasons why November 24th, 2018 is a terrible date. That was the date that Chuck Liddell fought Tito Ortiz for the third time. That Golden Boy MMA BS. And the co-main event of that card was Duran Wynn versus Filthy Tom Lawler. And Duran Wynn dominated the fight. Unanimous decision cruised. And then from there, it was like the Duran Wynn show. Oh man, this guy is like a super duper talent. He was 5-0 after that fight. And as soon as that card was over, the UFC like scooped him right up. I wish that event never happened for multiple reasons, but this is one of them, because Jerome got a little more seasoning somewhere else. Like, he had fought for Bellator the fight before that. He might have got like a couple more fights with Bellator, maybe with like a Titan FC or something like that, and got a little more seasoning. Maybe he would have been on the Contender Series. Like, instead of just throwing him right into the UFC, I kind of wish he had more time to grow. But I mean, would he get an opportunity to fight in the UFC 5-0, 4-0, 35-0? You take it. So I don't blame him for it, but I kind of wish he had more time to like get more experience. I mean, the guys he was beating on the regional scene, this guy was 7-5-1, 4-7, 3-7, and making his professional debut before the Tom Lawler fight.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time, but man, there's so many fighters. We wonder how different could their careers have been if they'd come along differently. They got more time in the regional scene. I feel that way about Chase Hooper right now. I certainly felt that way about Sage Northcutt watching a couple of his UFC fights. I was like, man, what if he had had the chance to build his resume, you know, with 6, 7, 8 more fights on the regional scene, just blowing by, you know, blowing through cans or very gradually moving his way up the ladder. But once you get signed to the UFC, it's almost like there's no going back. We've certainly seen cases. There's certainly been exceptions of people who have flamed out in the UFC, gone back to regionals, won some fights, got some life experience and come back. But it's rare. It's rare. For every one of those, there's 10, 15, 20 fighters who they get that one shot at the UFC and are just never able to get back on the developmental track. If anything, just because it's hard to find opponents who want to fight them when they get back to the original scene, and it's just not worth their or they can't find any comparable pay, and it's just not worth their time anymore. So Darren Wynn, for sure, a perfect example of guys we talk about, so clearly talented, has an elite skill which can take you very, very far in MMA. But you know, again, once you go from Tom Lawler to some of the guys who's fought in the UFC, it's really hard to go back. So yeah, very hard to gauge what's going to be up with Daron Wynn in the future.
I still think it's too early to tell.
For Jeff Dale, yeah. What's next for Greg Hardy?
Let's talk about Tabura first.
Yeah.
Good.
You and I will talk about it tomorrow, AK.
Yeah, sure.
But Jose, I mean, sneaky good Marcin Tybura. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, had a rough stretch. Now he's won 4 fights in a row. He's training with Jan Blachowicz. He's in Vegas from time to time now. Guy's rolling right now. Finishes Greg Hardy, became an instant hero amongst a lot of MMA fans around the world. What did you think of his performance, and where do you see him going after a big win over Greg Hardy tonight?
Top 15. I tweeted, I just assumed he was ranked just because the UFC heavyweight division is so shallow that just a heavyweight with 3 wins in a row should probably be 3 wins in a row. And his most recent win before tonight was over Ben. Well, I'm talking before tonight.
Oh, sorry.
3 wins in a row. And this, his most recent win was over Ben Rothwell. Like, I just assumed he had a number next to his name. So when I went to go look and I didn't find him in the rankings, I was like, that's odd. So top 15, probably somewhere in the lower, in like the 15 to 10 range. Maybe Blagoy Ivanov, maybe. I know he called for Curtis Blades or Derek Lewis, but those guys have to fight. So not someone in the top 5, top 7s, but top 15, like 15 to 10. Ivanov hasn't fought in a minute. Arlovsky's out there. He already lost to Sakai, if I remember correctly, so not that fight. So Walt Harris is coming off back-to-back losses, so maybe him too. But yeah, Tybura looked good in the second round. I think we were all in agreement. We were completely caught off guard by the first round, but how, like, Greg Hardy probably looked better than ever until his asthma and his cardio caught up to him. So yeah, good win, somewhere between 15 to 10, I would say, just because now he should be ranked 4 wins in a row at heavyweight.
Yeah, all in 2020. I didn't realize they were all in 2020. I thought one of those was the end of 2019. So we're top 5 fighter, guys, our fighter of the year lists are going to look pretty weird this year. It's kind of
which,
crazy.
Which we knew.
I'm going to ask this. Because I tweeted it too and nobody answered me. Is going 4-0 against 4 unranked fighters better than going 2-0 against ranked fighters?
No. I mean, it certainly depends.
But 4-0 and finishing Greg Hardy. Not just.
Sure.
It depends who those unranked fighters are and who those ranked fighters are. But I mean, obviously, if we're just speaking sort of abstractly.
Like, if we're talking about the heavyweight division, like Overeem has 2 TKOs in the main event of fights. And as Casey Lydon and his rules of MMA are, the higher the stakes and the higher the caliber of fights, the more prominent they're going to be placed in come award season, these fake awards that we give out. So Overeem also had the unfortunate situation of being the first fight back for Walt Harris, which no one wanted that. No one wanted that situation because you're going to – it's an impossible situation. It's an impossible situation. I doubt he wanted it.
No, one like, he was impossible. Like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, what I was going to say is Overeem is the pro that would be able to handle that situation.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, Overeem, to me, is the heavyweight fighter of the year just because he's 2-0 with 2 finishes. But, man, Tybura, I had a sneaky 4-0. And also, he looked great against Ben Rothwell. Let's not forget about that.
Yep.
I believe the beginning of the year, I think I might have been either, I might have been the first fight, this Spivak fight. I see something like, I cannot remember, it's something like, but Martin Tybura has X amount of fights in the UFC, a double-digit amount of fights, and I can't remember anything about it. He's had a couple of good finishes.
So he headlined against Verdum, didn't he? Doesn't he have a main event fight against Verdum? Main event against Verdum.
I don't remember any of that fight. No, I don't remember. I don't know. I know you have a better memory than I do, but I'd be shocked if you remember details of that fight. I don't remember anything.
I remember he fought in Texas and got his head cut knocked off by Derek Lewis.
He's had a very solid UFC career. It's just it's the memorable moments, positive moments for him are pretty few and far between. So for me to say that at the beginning of the year, and guess what? Now he's on a 4-fight win streak, which is tied, I think, with Ngannou. Who's the other? It's Ngannou and Blades, I think. So
I think Tybura is. Does Ngannou have 4 in a row?
He's won four in a row, I believe. Okay. Yeah, so I think they're all tied for like the best, you know, the best streak right now. And I, again, I was making jokes. That's pretty memorable. You know, I can joke all I want. Again, maybe I don't remember all the details of the Maxim Krishan fight or the Sergey Spivak fight, but 4-0 is 4-0. Greg Hardy is not very good. I think let's be honest here. I think today we saw. Casey, you and I are always debating how much does the athleticism gap matter that he has between him and his opponents. It still matters a lot. Like I said, it looks like he won the first round and against a more experienced guy. I think the athleticism plus the improvements he made matter. But we knew Tabora is just such a more experienced, more well-rounded fighter. We knew if the fight got to the ground, it was going to be a wrap. The only thing I was wondering is why didn't he get it there earlier? Probably easier said than done to take a guy like Greg Hardy down. But once he did, it was over. So to sort of go to the original question.
Greg Hardy is a large human.
He's gigantic. And again, really fast. Again,
but he's only fast for one round.
Sure. But I'm saying,
He's fast for one round, and that's exactly what an NFL Pro Bowl defensive lineman is going to be. They only need to be fast for 3 seconds at a time.
Exactly. Yeah. I put weight, but not like, he was in the NFL. This is clearly going to transfer to MMA. Dude, the cardio is so different, especially for someone his size.
And but cardio is such a
weapon.
Like,
he has no weapon.
How much that helped him to win fights against guys like Jorgen De Castro. Like, Jorgen De Castro is a much better martial artist than Greg Hardy. But guess what? That doesn't matter in an MMA fight necessarily. Right?
We're talking he's a part-time security guard. I mean, fighter. I mean, Jorgen Castro was a good fighter. I mean, that's who Greg Hardy was dominating over.
But when it comes to martial arts, he is much more experienced in combat sports than Greg Hardy is. Okay, but when you add in the physical gifts that Greg Hardy has, that's how wins, like very convincing wins over guys like De Castro happen. So I'm just saying, athleticism definitely matters, but it can only take you so far. Eventually, there's a skill gap too. And the skill gap between someone like Tabora and Hardy, the experience gap is huge and totally overcomes the athleticism gap. But again, Hardy won that first round, right? So there's something there. What's next for him? Honestly, I don't think it'll happen, but I think Dana White likes him. I think the UFC likes him, but I wouldn't be surprised. He's also a big ticket item. I think someone told me he made $180,000.
He's not in the contender series contract. How about that?
He's making a lot of money. And if we're talking about that magical number of 60 cuts, I would not be surprised if the UFC sees this performance the kind of way he just kind of rolled over and gave up. He had no ground game, no concept. You're right. And you guys are right. He's probably just freaking exhausted. Maybe he's kind of a draw. I still don't know if that's proven. They keep putting him on main cards. I don't know how much of a draw he is other than the draw they're kind of trying to manufacture. We're talking about him certainly, but I mean, is that enough to keep a guy who costs like 180 grand, almost 200 grand a fight, when that could sign like 15 contender series guys with that money? I don't know what's next, but if he got released, I wouldn't be surprised. Let's put it that way.
He ain't getting released,
No way.
Crazy talk.
If anything, they'll be like, they'll just use this performance in the exact opposite way. Oh, he looked really good in the first round. That he could get better. He just became a different fighter. It's they'll just point at very specific things that everyone else sees as a detriment.
And
look, Brock Lesnar got beat up for one round and won. He still won.
I think they go two ways of this. One, they give him a guy like Parker Porter.
Yeah.
Which would be fun. And Parker Porter would be all for that. Or they give him a guy like Tanner Bozier, who the UFC like sees a lot in. And it's kind of like a win-win for them either way. Because they see value in Greg Hardy. He creates buzz, creates controversy, good or bad, mostly bad. That's just what it is. When Greg Hardy's on a card, it's always on a main card, and people talk about that. So give him Bozier. Bozier has a chance to become a sort of an instant hero. I mean, he has the Arlovsky loss on his record. They're both coming off of losses. I'm okay with that. So you either go that route, or you give him Hardy a big step back and, you know, give him a guy like Parker Porter or something like that. That's what I think they do. I don't think they give him like a huge name or anything like that.
No.
Yeah, I agree with Mike. Tabora, give him someone, you know, someone top 15. I don't know, whoever. There's no real prime matchup for him, just someone good. And whoever's at the bottom end of UFC heavyweight rankings right now, that's definitely who Greg Hardy should fight. Because they're not going to get rid of him. They've invested too much time into him just to get rid of him off this loss. And a bad loss.
And money, I guess.
Yeah, they got money.
Yeah, so – but don't expect to see him in – fights with like Juan Espino or Alexander Romanov. Like, you're not going to see any of that. Like,
you know, who's that English cat, that heavyweight prospect?
He's undefeated. Aspinall. Yeah,
he's real good. Yeah, no. Aspinall.
You don't want to hear that.
I put him in that group of like heavyweight. Like, people talk about how shallow the heavyweight division is. Like, mm-hmm. there's some really good heavyweight prospects out there. Like Cyril Gane.
Dacus,
like,
too.
It's like, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, Cyril Gane, I think we can all agree, is kind of like the peak of these prospects right now, because he's kind of broke through that ceiling. He's no longer a prospect. There are some awesome heavyweight prospects on the up and up right now.
Is this true?
For sure.
If this guy is still, I don't know if he's officially been cut yet, but if they want to keep this guy around, Greg Hardy and Rocky Martinez. There you go. There's your Greg Hardy matchup if you want to see him. If you're a fan of his and you want to see him get back on track. And by the way, Rocky is really fun to watch, but I do think that that's a matchup that they would think is favorable for Greg Hardy. Maybe they'd be wrong, but I'm sure on paper it would be.
I feel a little dirty.
That would be super interesting, because Rocky can take a punch, man. He can take a shot. And he's got pretty good cardio. Like, he gets to a third round, he's fine. So that would actually be a really interesting fight.
I feel a little dirty, but I want to see Greg Hardy versus John Belante.
That was the other. I looked at that name too.
But I don't want them to actually fight the first round. I want them just to kind of run around in circles, do a bunch of burpees. So when they start the second round, I want them like completely exhausted. I don't want to see full cardio either one. I just want to see two exhausted men. Did you see how tired Greg Hardy was during the hand raise? I thought he was going to heave over and throw up when Tybura got his hand raised.
What if Ovin St. Preux hops up to heavyweight? Let's do a couple football players throwing down in there.
I like that. I like that.
He would kill Greg Hardy.
He would kill Greg Hardy.
Ovin St. Preux is also like, do you remember when he headlined, was it against Glover in Nashville? Was it in Nashville and did that whole package of him going to like back to the Tennessee football?
He was not anything.
On the Tennessee Volunteers football team, and they have him sitting in the locker room, and his jersey's up next to Peyton Manning, and then like Todd Helton jersey's next to him. I'm like, what is this? Like, Ovin St. Preux was like, I bet if you went to anyone in the that ever played for Tennessee, they couldn't name you who Ovin St. Preux was. Like, Greg Hardy was far and away a better football player than Ovin St. Preux, and OSP is a far and away better MMA fighter than Greg Hardy. But make it happen.
They're trying to make him like the Ron Simmons of the UFC. Because Ron Simmons had that at Florida State pedigree, but he was like an All-American at Florida State.
Yeah. Nope. All right. Terry Crews over in Hollywood.
Thank you for the question, Natalie Duran. Thank you for the question.
Find another question.
Casey.
Oh, you know what?
Many questions have been answered?
There we go. Thank you. Tristan has been spamming this question.
Wait,
in
is
the
this
chat,
is this a new avatar? A new user photo by Tristan Gordet?
I believe it is.
Look at him.
Tristan, are you glowing up, as the kids say?
Yeah.
Thoughts on Jimmy Flick's flying triangle choke. Let me start here. I will be an open book. I thought Cody Durden was going to run right through Jimmy Flick tonight. I really did. In the early stages of that fight, I was looking pretty darn good with my thoughts on that fight. But Durden made a mistake. He did exactly what he didn't want to do, and you knew it. Soon as he started like moving his spine downwards towards the mat when Jimmy Flick was falling backwards, he knew he was done. He knew it.
It's a wrap.
So huge win for Jimmy Flick. He comes through. Serious guy, deserved a bonus. AK, let me start with you. Where do we put this one? Because I think the submission of the year overall for award season, it's AJ McKee, and there's like no one really close to that. Sure. But in terms of the UFC, where do you rank this submission in terms of like best submissions of the year?
Man, that was really good. It's great because it's one of those ones that lived up to what we expected, you know. And by the way, Mike, you know, Durden was winning the fight up to that point. I mean, Durden looked super sharp. It's not like Durden should be disappointed. He knows he got caught. He afterwards you could see how mad he was. Not at anyone but himself. You could see the post fight. He was so mad at himself. But it was so perfectly executed by Flick. He knew what he wanted to do. He said, "Man, this guy. He was like a spider. You know, he caught him in the web. It's like, if this guy catches my leg, I've got him." And sure enough, he throws a kick, like gets caught, throws it right up, flying triangle. Very rarely seen flying triangle. I believe people said the only the third in UFC history. The other, Pablo Garza and Pepe, Godofredo Pepe. So very rare. I think it's a top three. I got to admit, my list is a work in progress. Like you said, I don't know if anything was talking to AJ McKee, but I could see it making the top three. Recency bias, of course, always huge when we talk about these things. So I'm very high on it. And I just love that. I see Flick as being the kind of guy who has an identity, you know, much like a, I'm going to throw the name out there, like a Ryan Hall. Not on that level, of course. There's only one Ryan Hall, but someone who every time he goes out, cool name, first of all, Jimmy Flick, and has a gimmick. People will be like, oh, this is the crazy submission guy. This is the guy who maybe, you know, Winnerly, you might see an Imanari roll in there. You might see a flying triangle. We now know that that's in play, flying armbar, something, right? And that's a great place to be. So he made a really big impact coming out of the Contender Series, huge impact in his debut. Yeah, great one. And maybe what I think a top three submission when all the voting is said and done of 2020.
What did you think of Flick's performance, Jose?
Awesome. I mean, I picked him at the very last minute on our fight Q&A, so I looked like a genius, but I picked that with no confidence whatsoever. But, I mean, I'm always in for flying fill in the blank when it comes to submissions inside the octagon. If it's submission of the year, probably not. Maybe top five, but I would probably put it four or five. If anything, I still hold Habib's submission over Justin Gaethje in high regards, considering the stakes, and it was against Justin Gaethje, and it was, you know, Habib's last. He was 29-0, but AJ McKee's, I think, is a no-brainer. Kelleher's was awesome. Charles Oliveira's over Kevin Lee was awesome. Just trying to think of some off the top of my head. Diego Fajeda's over Anthony Pettis's was awesome. There's a lot of good ones. Aljamain Sterling putting Corey Sandhagen in a literal sleep was awesome. But yeah, Flick's up there. I just really have to sit down and think about it. But top five, top seven, maybe.
I just thought about Lipsky. Yeah, thank you. I know. I read Casey. I think Casey channeled that to us mentally, because suddenly the image of that leg being twisted just filled my brain.
Mackenzie Dern, too.
Yeah, I was about to say Mackenzie's over Cyphers, because that was like the fourth out of leg
block. I think Dern over Marcos. I thought that was a better one. But whatever.
But wasn't Cyphers a record for, like, it was like the first legs lock submission and something like that, or in fastest history? Yeah. So anytime you break a record, I kind of give it a little nod up. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic submission, technically perfect, just great submission. But it might break the top five for submissions of the year for the UFC only. But but freaking flyweights. Look at those flyweights. Yeah.
Oh, good.
So good. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about Mr. Flick. Seems like a good personality, exciting fighter, and a welcome addition to the UFC flyweights.
Just got to get a stand up and check, though, if he wants to move up.
For sure.
He's got to.
That's what I kind of like about some of these one-dimensional guys, though. Like, you know, it's a throwback, right? It's a throwback to – again, and look, we have guys that can only wrestle. Why can't we – well, I should know. I know the answer to this question, but it's kind of cool when it's like some guy just – you know what he wants to do, and it's his one route to victory, and sometimes you can't even stop him, right?
I'm going to try to get Jimmy Flick on What the Heck this week.
Please do. We need to know what's going through this man's head when he thinks to throw a technique like that in his friggin' UFC debut. You know what I mean?
Savage. Such a savage move. What do you think? Like, how long have we been going, Casey?
About 90 minutes.
Okay.
What? Hour and 20. We're 1 hour and 24 minutes.
Holy crap. Yeah. All right. We'll do one more question, then we're getting out of here.
One more question?
I'm going to
find a new question. Let me see what we got here. Come on, guys. Give me a good question.
No pressure. No pressure on this last week. The viewers, you've had some amazing questions tonight already. So great job. It's all gravy now. You guys have already carried the show with your amazing questions. Some of the comments that I'm reading, a little rude, but, you know, hey, we keep it real around here. I got plenty of time to cry tomorrow, guys. Don't worry about it. I got a whole Sunday. Sundays for crying. That's why I always spend my Sundays. So,
I love waking up and just crying on Sunday. It's my best. It's
the best. Just think about all the comments that I've read about us, and just like.
While we try to find one more great question, just wanted to shout out the rest of the winners tonight. Christos Giagos, short notice, 3 days notice. It's a win over Carlton Minus. Tafan Nchukwi with a successful UFC debut win.
And Nchukwi was real impressive. Sorry, Mike, I don't want to stop your run here, but I just want to say he came in with people. He was one of the biggest favorites in the card. So obviously there's this expectation. If anyone saw him, was like, oh, this is a guy who's just going to like come out like a truck swinging and be a first round knockout. And he did that, but also adapted as the fight went on and had a lot of controlled aggression. He looked very advanced for a guy in just his fifth pro fight. So I was more impressed by him going the distance and winning a convincing decision against a very game, Jamie Pickett actually, I thought, fought really well tonight as well. Then him just coming out some 15-second, 25-second flash knockout. Obviously, that's a great moment. That would tell us a lot as well. But getting this amount of data, 15 minutes of seeing a prospect that fight, real, real impressive. So great debut for Nchukwi.
Agreed. I was really impressed with Tyler Santos as well. Good win over Jillian Robertson. The fact of that fight played on the feet for like 30 seconds of the 15 minutes was unbelievable to me. And Tyler Santos just dominated Jillian Robertson on the ground the entire time. She has herself in, there were some tough positions there, but Santos stayed so composed in those moments. She's legit, man.
I think so. I was hoping we were going to talk about her. What was Santos's last victory? Was it McCann? Was that
Molly McCann?
That was the McCann fight.
Yeah. So that's two fights in a row. Has she had trouble making flyweight before? So she's not one of those like, well, if she can make flyweight, she's great. No, I like her a lot. She has a lot of potential. I don't know how good she is, but I definitely see her in the top 10. And I think we're going to be, I think she's going to be around for a while. I think she's going to be a contender. And Robertson was doing great in the ground, was putting her submissions. But yeah, like you said, Santos handled it. She was in submissions. She worked her way out and got out of them and stayed in a dominant position. Very impressive. Very impressive. I was picking Robertson to kind of dominate on the ground, and I was wrong.
There's a lot of hype around Tyler Santos coming into the UFC off the Contender Series. And then she laid such an egg against Mara Romero Barella. Like, what a terrible debut that was. It was bad. I'm sorry. It was horrible. It was a horrible debut. Yeah. She was just like, I was like, what are you doing? What is happening right now? But she seems, maybe those octagon jitters are as legit as, Joe Rogan likes to talk about. But, man, she's come back in a big way. The McCann fight was super impressive. That was an eye opener. And then to do that to Jillian Robertson, she's on her way. She could be a wild card pick for on to the next one very easily.
Could be.
She could be. Do we have anything else, Casey?
We have that last question?
Oh, yeah, last question. But because we didn't even mention it. My biggest shocker of the night, honestly, was Panny Kinzad. I thought
really? Eubanks. Oh, Panny Kinzad.
I thought Eubanks. I mean, I've always thought Eubanks was very good, and despite her record, she just kind of never hit that potential. And I feel like every fight, this is the fight where Eubanks is really gonna like show it. And I like Panny Kinzad. I think she's an exciting fighter, but I never really thought of her as an elite bantamweight. And man, she's getting better. She's just getting better. And I don't think Panny Kinzad is going to be fighting for a title, but I thought she was going to get whooped up tonight, and she did great. I was impressed. Just want to give her a shout-out.
She learned a lot. She learned a lot from the Julia Avila fight. She got beat up pretty badly in that fight.
Panny's only lost to, like, very high-level fighters in the UFC.
And her Invicta. Yeah, her losses in general, yeah. Yeah.
Her UFC debut was a featherweight, too. Let's not forget.
Well, yeah, because to get the whole tough thing.
Ultimate Fighter, yeah.
Yeah. So last question. We talked about Pereira, but did we mention what we want next for Chaos?
What's nice? Well, this question isn't, because this question says what's nice for Michelle and Chaos?
An edible, one of those edible arrangements?
Healthy 2021.
Yes, that would be nice. Since we probably won't be talking about this, AK, let's give the folks a little preview of onto the next one. What is next for one Chaos Williams? Because, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong, but anything stick out to you?
I need a lot of research before. No, okay, I'll say. I don't think he, like, I mean, again, he almost kind of won tonight, right? So it wasn't like a bad performance at all. I do wonder how the matchmakers are going to view him. I certainly wouldn't treat it as a win. We've seen matchmakers do that sometimes where a fight is, if they thought it went the wrong way, they'll say, oh, we essentially book it like a win and move him up. So I don't know if I'd go that far, but I'm looking at my rankings here. What is up with Song Kinnan? Where'd he go? I know this seems kind of random, but I'm just saying I have them in that general vicinity.
That's a good question. I want to say
I think Max Griffin might be interesting. It's a little bit, you know, quite a bit more UFC experience, but I like the matchup though. I'm just throwing it out there. My answer on the next one's show will probably be very different. But again, I'm not, I know people are like, oh, what, you know, why don't, I'm sure they're thinking, I don't know who these people are. Why are you kind of naming these random names? I think we need to dial it back with Kaz Williams. I'm not a fan of someone getting two big knockouts or whatever, and just shooting them up the rankings. I know it's fun to do. I know it's fun. It's why, you know, we have a matchmaking show. We should just be picking fun matchups, but let's scale it back. I think there were deficiencies shown in this fight, whether you thought he won or not. I do think there were deficiencies shown. I'd like to scale it back. I just want to see him facing something a little, you know, a little more closer to him in experience. Pajeda was a good matchup, so yeah, I'm saying stick with that. I'm not looking to throw him in there with a UFC veteran. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, who have they're not pushing Chaos. I feel like he's got appropriate fights every single time.
Oh no, I'm just saying. I think people, again, if we see like the responses when we do throw out like, oh, who's next for Chaos Williams after his last fight? People just throw out wild stuff. They throw out like top 15, top 20 guys, and it's like, settle down. We're all very excited. He looks like he's a very promising fighter. Let's scale it back to someone again. Maybe a name that's not going to pop off the page, but there's all kinds of welterweight is a very deep division. There's all kinds of people within his range that I think are good logical matchups for him.
It's easy because he's
Song Kinnan is fighting Max Griffin March 20th.
You're joking, and I just named both of them. Well,
yep.
It's easy.
I have the answer to this question, by the way.
Go ahead, Mike. Just I'll throw it out there, but where would you put, is Brandon Moreno too high or too low for Chaos?
Brandon Moreno?
Not Brandon Moreno.
Brandon Moreno's a flyweight.
Alex Morano. Sorry. Alex Morano.
You know,
oh my God. You're right. They are
fought in Houston.
Rematch. That's what I mean, though. Chaos is kind of in this weird spot where, like you want to kind of push him back in the line, but Moreno just fought freaking Pettis, you know? So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he lost, but yet, I don't know. It's like matchmaking is very odd.
Yeah.
So Chaos Williams just fought twice in like 2 months. Like, he had a really quick turnaround. Like, he got one of the knockouts of the year, and then like 4 days later, he was already booked to fight Michelle Pajeda on this card. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Give him some time. Let him heal up a little bit. There is a gentleman who has needed to heal up himself, kind of had a health scare, looks to be coming around. Chaos Williams versus Brian Barberina is the fight to make.
Oh,
is that too high?
Let those two just get in there.
AK, you were just talking about don't give him a veteran.
I don't love that one either. I didn't say it. Mike might be my best friend, but I don't speak for him. Okay, all right. We have different opinions on things. All right, I don't support everything he says. We're best friends.
You are DMing me right now saying that is a great decision, not, Mike. Yeah, like we have a private chat, and you're just like going.
Jose has a thought. Jose,
save us.
What do you like? Save us,
Daniel Rodriguez.
Ooh, I like that one too.
I like that.
They both had hype. They both lost. They both lost to like game opponents. Like, they don't have anything to hang their head on losing. So it's a fun fight. They both also don't talk a lot. Like, they're just two intimidating cats that break brick on people. Do it. Dwight Grant, he lost to Daniel Rodriguez. Is that his last fight? He's coming off an L2.
Yeah,
like, he's coming up, anyone in there.
Yeah, he just lost the fight because of the coach. He was supposed to fight this weekend. He's supposed to fight today, I think. David Grant. Oh, last week.
We gotta biff that one. Do we have a non-matchmaking question to go on?
Yeah, non-matchmaking.
We biffed it a little bit.
But again, the UFC doesn't make fights that we want.
Right, exactly. We can name all the routes.
What is a non-match? I don't want to talk about gentlemen, it is too much to talk about the lawsuit. I know everyone was like, lawsuit.
I saw it. And there's nothing to say. Honestly, there's not a lot to say about it.
Read the articles. Yeah, it's a
thing. No, not just that. It's an in-progress case. There's really nothing we can speculate on that's going to give you more information, unfortunately.
I did ask Chaos, and he no-sold it, about the James Krause matchup, because him and Buckley are teammates, and it seems like the only reason this fight isn't being made is because Krause wants it at 170 and Buckley wants it at 185, and neither seems to be bending. Chaos is at 170. Why don't you just step in there and do the damn thing? Chaos knows all. He goes, dude, those two have their own beef. Ain't my business.
Just like you and I, Mike, just because we're best friends. Yeah, we're best friends. We don't have the same agree. We don't agree on everything. We don't have the same enemies. You know, yeah, we don't fight each other's battles. Right.
Right. Exactly.
We're just like Chaos Williams. We're the Chaos Williams and Joaquin Buckley of the MMA media.
That's right. Do we have anything else? Are we all good? Of course.
Yeah, I think we're good. I think we're going to have to watch.
I think we've got it. Okay. Listen, we're going to have, we'll have tons of programming talking about this card. So don't you freaking worry about it. If you have more questions, bring them in. Bring them on Wednesday for the A-Side Live Chat.
Thank you, everyone.
We appreciate all of you. Lots of post-fight shows. What is this, 24 in a row? 24 Saturdays in a row we did this? I think that's right.
Yes. Yep, 24 in a row. This was it.
Jeez Louise. And it's been an honor and a privilege here in 2020. I feel like we're saying goodbye. We're just saying so long until January 16th, where we do this all over again, when Calvin Kattar and Max Holloway do the damn thing. And that's going to be a hell of a fight, so I'm excited for that. So in the meantime, me and AK will see you probably tomorrow if you're a subscriber to the podcast network for On to the Next One. If not, you'll get it Monday. But for Jose, Casey Lydon, AK, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody. Thanks for watching us for the post-fight show. Final one of 2020.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.